dropping our whole trading platform down. Oh, yeah, that. You know that burning platform we've talked about for years? It finally collapsed. But what are we going to do now?
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Software Horror Stories podcast. My name is Tom Cooper, and today we're definitely going to talk about some failures, and then I want to talk about a formula you can use starting today that will improve your outcomes. Let's jump right in. Chapter 1, The Problem, a Burning Platform. So what happens? You step into a job or a role, and you discover there's a part of the application portfolio. It's important. It's even critical to the business, but it's running on a platform that can't be supported. Or maybe the vendor went out of business. Maybe the vendor put it on extended support, or they're just telling you they're not going to provide any support for it in the future. Maybe the technology is so old that literally everyone who has the technical skill set in that area is either preparing for retirement or worse. What can you do? Have you ever been sure that technology needed to be replaced, but you just couldn't get the support from the organization to make that happen? I remember living through that when I was working for a large company. That company had a pattern of finding budget to roll out new systems, but they never budgeted for the full lifecycle of the tech, including upgrade and eventual replacement. They focused on how much is this going to cost, and they wanted to make that number look as small as possible, and that approach led to many new technologies gradually dying on the vine. Hardware and software eventually falling off support, even when the business still depended on that technology solution to solve ongoing and critical business problems. So what was the consequence? The IT team had to become experts in finding hacks and tools and workarounds to overcome the limited support or find ways to keep things operational. And back when the IT dinosaurs roamed the earth and Windows NT on x86 hardware was current technology, I worked for a retailer client who was running their entire store business on OS2 x86. They depended day by day on point-of-sale systems running an operating system that was not supported on hardware that had not been sold or supported for many years. We ended up having to source repair parts and spares off of eBay. Years later, when I was working as a consultant, I had an engagement with the IT finance team of a stock trading company. Now, their technical team knew there was overwhelming technical debt on this platform, and they were worried about the fact that the vendor wasn't really even supporting that technology anymore, but it kept running. So every time they asked for budget to replace it, they heard the bean counters say, "No, not this year." Now, this process repeated itself 5 years in a row. Each time they worked on budget planning, they proposed funding needed to replace that platform, and every year they heard, "Not this year." Has that kind of thing ever happened to you? When the bosses just wouldn't listen to you, but you were sure there was a problem? As you might expect, everything was just fine with this platform, until it wasn't. One fateful afternoon, the platform finally gave up the ghost. The system crashed hard. And when that critical part of the infrastructure went down, it took down the entire trading platform. Everything went offline. The entire business was stopped dead in its tracks. The cost of that? Enormous. Surprisingly, all of a sudden, the powers that be were able to find funding to go back and replace that platform. So what do you do when you're on a burning platform? Recently, two of my clients had a need to replace enterprise software running on 30-year-old platforms. That's right, 30-year-old platforms. At one level, it's really impressive that a system designed so long ago could still be operational and adding significant business value all these years later. And today, I want to talk about what it takes to deal with that. So one option is you could hope for the best. I mean, is doing nothing a good choice? Well, that was the approach used by the folks at the stock trading platform. It worked perfectly fine, until it didn't. I had another client who was in that situation. If I remember correctly, they had something like 30 locations across the country, and the CTO had indicated that there was a need to replace the phone systems in each office with unified communications. The cost was relatively low, and the new capabilities of the VoIP system would help significantly. So they rolled out the new system, and everyone lived happily ever after, right? Nope. When the CIO went to the line of business to get financial support for the capital expenditure of about $200 per handset, maybe $10,000 a location, the business people said, "Why would we do that? We have a perfectly good phone system. It's fully paid for. We don't need to waste money on something like that." Now, the CIO and the CTO knew it was a problem, but without budget, what could they do? Well, apparently they could sit back and watch the show. Now, if you lived in a bubble where you never interacted with the outside world, you might be able to make the case that support, Maintenance, bug fixes, and security patches are a luxury that need not be funded. And that may be true in some situations, but frankly, that's pretty darn rare. And it wasn't the case here. Now, those of you who've been around for a while won't be surprised to hear that everything was fine until it wasn't. One day, the business folks were stunned to get a bill for one location that was $40,000 more that month than they typically spent, and that was just for one location. Apparently, the operating system on the unsupported phone systems had security vulnerabilities that were no longer patched because the vendor had dropped the platform off even their extended support. And some hackers had found the phone system, discovered the vulnerabilities, and then began to exploit them to make a lot of international phone calls, which were ultimately billed to my client. Well, now the business folks were paying attention. Now they saw they were at risk, and they were powerless to fix that problem. They'd gotten a big phone bill for one location. They realized there was an ongoing risk at all the other locations, and all of a sudden, they were interested in doing something about it. So what's the common theme in all these stories? An obsolete toolkit that was in use, it was delivering value to the business. Technical team members identified there was a technology problem, and despite their best efforts, they were unable to avoid the company simply driving off the upcoming cliff. They saw the cliff, but the business folks would not see it. One more story. I was working with the CIO of a billion-dollar company, and he became convinced the technology limitations in the software the sales team was using, that they were holding back corporate sales and profits. And he saw those challenges, and he determined he was going to solve that problem. So what did he do? He assigned team members to look for options and come up with solutions that could address those critical limitations. Now, as you might expect, this was an unfunded project, and it did get best effort. Now, the team was smart, dedicated, and hardworking, and they innovated. They developed some custom scripts and tools, and they found some inexpensive commercial products that could meet the ultimate need. And eventually, they had a technical option that was bargain basement cheap, but it actually addressed all of the limitations of the existing toolkit. The CIO was excited. All he had to do now was get the sales team to learn the new way, and then huge new sales would be headed to the company, right? He was going to be a hero. The problem? Well, the head of sales had been thinking about the sales problem, and as he evaluated the causes and the potential solutions, he had already put together a prioritized set of projects that he was convinced would be the fix for that sales slump. And the CIO's project was not anywhere near the top of the sales leader's list of concerns. So how do you think that effort went? In my years of working in the tech industry, I've seen these trends happen over and over again. Even when a technology project is recognized as useful and some funding is allocated to address it, so often these projects end up not going live, or if they do, they deliver so much less value than they could have if they had had the right support from the very beginning. So far in this episode, we've talked about the burning platform and a number of failures. In Chapter 2, I want to talk about a recent success story. You're a business or tech leader who has important applications on a burning platform. You know you have to replace it. You're running short on time and skills to make that a reality. You cannot keep it going forever. You've seen other replacement efforts struggle and fail, and you just can't afford to let that happen here. I'm Tom Cooper. I help leaders in companies like yours use my Impact Accelerator framework. I help you get off your burning platform safely and quickly. And using my proven formula, I can help you assemble the team that can really deliver maximum business benefit while reducing your risk of having your legacy platform let you down. Together, we can come up with a plan that shows tangible return, helps your organization focus on your highest business value problems first. I can help your team stay focused throughout application delivery without adding to the ongoing expense for a full-time product leader. You get an easy process to replace your aging technology, you reduce your risk, and you get higher business value on the journey. Want to learn more? Head over to brighthillgroup.com/impactaccelerator to get more details. brighthillgroup.com/impactaccelerator to get more details and set up a call to talk about your specific needs. Chapter 2, What Can Happen? A Success Story. So in the first chapter, we talked at length about the challenges that lay in front of smart, hardworking, committed technical team members trying heroically to rescue the company from impending doom. And the tragedy is they often found themselves sacrificing their effort, their passion, even their dignity in the process of getting run over by a technology train. But recently I worked with a client, let's call them Acme Industries, who was interested in building a solution. Now, what was different about this client? Well, this time it was the chief operating officer who drove the process, not a technical team member. And this COO, he was savvy enough to realize there was a technology component and a business element that were required to get from his current state to a successful new future. Now, I'm going to mention at this point a buzzword that I generally can't stand: digital transformation. Now, this term leaves a bad taste in my mouth because I've seen really, really terrible projects that were billed as a digital transformation, but actually, like that sales enablement toolkit, were duct tape and baling wire, and the leaders put lipstick on that pig. You won't be able to cheap out and achieve any substantive transformation, and that has been so painful to watch those projects blow up time after time. So why was it that my COO client was in such a good position when so many of the technical experts found themselves in bad shape? Well, he had the vision to realize, with the right approach and the right team, amazing things could happen. We had to navigate the question, in order to deliver the needed business results, should we buy a product? Should we build a product, or partner with somebody to get what we wanted? We looked at the market first to evaluate commercially available products and realized that the specialized needs they had were not readily available in the marketplace. Even the newest, shiniest, sexiest software out there could not consistently deliver the kinds of results that old Reliable was delivering day in and day out. We even had looked at the partnering strategy, and this client had attempted to partner previously and had moderate success with it, but they knew that if they wanted to get to their new bright future, they were going to have to think differently about it. Now, the fundamental problem with old Reliable, that toolkit was pretty darn old. In fact, the primary developer who had written so much of the current capabilities over the last 20 years had decided to retire. And finding team members to replace her who had relevant skills, well, it wasn't a big market. The shine had come off that technology and toolkit many, many years ago, and young people were simply not willing to learn that tool when more modern and fun tools were available and popular. This toolkit was functioning, but the platform was definitely waning, and they needed to get off of it. The legacy platform needed to go. The business needed a replacement, and the time was right to invest in a true transformation project. But I want to point out, this is far from a blow the dust off the old stuff kind of thing. This is a genuine business project. In these situations, as I've mentioned, it's often the technology people who are the first to realize there's a problem. They know about the life cycle. They know about extended support and dependencies, even like supported operating system versions. And many times, these platforms are even running on old equipment or operating systems that were released more than a decade ago. As long as old Reliable keeps reliably doing its job, it's easy for the business to take it for granted. And this is something that happens all the time. We face a problem, we find a way to solve that problem, then we automate that problem, and finally, the last step is we immediately forget the problem ever existed. And that's what happens to these business folks. The system just is, and it always does what it's supposed to do. At Acme, instead of asking, what's the fastest way to convert this system to a newer technology, we asked a different question. What business problem or problems are we solving with this toolkit? And then we asked, is old Reliable doing it the best way? Now, of course, this feels like a longer and a harder question to answer. And at one level, that's true, but at another level, it really isn't. The reality is that a technology replacement effort will definitely change human behavior. This is foundationally, fundamentally, primarily, it is an organizational change project, and it's going to take more than technology and technologists to get this done. A lot more. As challenging as it is to implement technology change, getting humans to change is a lot tougher, and it's so often overlooked when we start to focus on the technical tasks. Now, at Acme, we assembled a multidisciplinary team, which included business leaders who were subject matter experts in how the Acme sausage was made, business analysts, a product manager, and senior technology leaders to look at how we could go about solving the real problems that led to profits for the company. This meant we needed to ask not only what do we do, but also why do we do it? Where does the business value come from? Now, I want to point out that this process started long before we brought any engineers in. So many times we think, we know what's needed, we need a lot of engineering, so let's get some engineers in here and get this problem solved. And if we had brought engineers in immediately, we would not have had any work for them to do. We began to create a product definition and prioritize the backlog of major modules. By taking a business-first approach, we were able to create a plan that helped us identify a critical, unmet business need that was related to Old Reliable that actually had the potential to deliver greater profits if it was solved well. We discovered there was a sales channel that was operating inefficiently and was also a bit of a black box, both for customers and for the fulfillment team, too. Because we were thinking business first, with a focus on value delivery, we were able to pivot from make it work like Old Reliable to how can we deliver value as fast as possible. And this approach really represents the best of the agile development philosophy. Now, ultimately, because we took this approach, we were able to do two things. One, we focused our development energies on getting return on investment, building business momentum for the client. And two, it gave us more time to work on understanding Old Reliable so that the new application we were building could really be transformational. This new business problem we were solving, sales channel, it required us to do a deep dive with the business subject matter experts and engage them in helping to define the operational processes as well as the tools that were needed. All the way through that process, we continued to work with the SMEs so they could see progress, they could give us feedback, and really understand the kinds of changes their department needed to make to get the most value out of the new sales channel tool. And while we worked on that, we also engaged the subject matter experts in Old Reliable to help define the desired features and capabilities that they longed to get from the legacy system but simply could not achieve given the many limits faced by the now ancient technology toolkit. Now, it's true that the scope of the sales channel tool was bigger than we originally estimated. But the exciting part is that once it launched, that toolkit generated much more sales revenue at a higher margin than we forecasted. I got to tell you, I love it when that happens. Now, when we come back from the break, I'll introduce the secret formula we used to deliver this kind of an outcome. So you're listening to the framework and the stories that I'm telling, and you're thinking, that sounds great, Tom, but if I'm honest with myself, I'm not sure that my organization really has what it takes right now to pull this off. And that may be true, but it may not be. And if that's the case, I'd like to investigate this with you because I feel very strongly that we can come alongside your team and bring the right people and the right processes in place to really make this a reality. We can help you see the return that you need to see to transform the business the way you need to transform the business and to deliver a technology replacement that allows you to sleep better at night. This is doable. It's not trivial, but we can make it easy for you by providing a simple process to follow to help guide you from the beginning through your new horizon. Reach out to me today at brighthillgroup.com/impactaccelerator. That's brighthillgroup.com/impactaccelerator. And we can talk about exactly how we can help you. Chapter 3, The Secret Formula. I remember one of my first jobs in my career, they taught me a class called The Art and Science of Project Management. I'm pretty old, but it was just a few years after the creation of the PMP certification. Project management, and particularly the formula for technology project management success, back in those days, it was a bit of a black art. In fact, one of my favorite quotes is from a science fiction author who says, "Any sufficiently developed technology is indistinguishable from magic." Arthur C. Clarke is right about that. When it comes to legacy application replacement, it seems to be a wondrous thing when we can do that replacement successfully. But it isn't a black art, and there is a process by which we can dramatically increase our chances of success. Now, so far, I have described a couple of elements in the overall formula that I use to set up these efforts for success, and I'm going to share that formula with you that you can use to get great results. There are three major parts of the formula, and there is a critical component which is often overlooked when we take this kind of project on that I'll talk about as we go. The first part of the formula I call business concept and blueprints. One critical key to success in this process is to begin and end with the business. You cannot start with the technology and think you're going to get to anything transformational. The only way to get to true transformation is to fundamentally, foundationally begin with the business needs and design your solution around delivery of business value as much as possible. We start working on business metrics for success, and then we complete the effort with confirming that we are delivering the promised business value. Our persistent intentionality of focusing on the business is one part of this overlooked element, and I'll touch on the other one shortly. From a business perspective, we look for what is the potential business value. We examine constraints, we determine the priority of the work to be completed, and we do that on the basis of business value. We know the problem, we know the value of the problem, and that's the business context. And with that business context in mind, we can work on whether this can be solved and generate meaningful ROI. Now, if you determine after this part of analysis that you cannot solve it and get the ROI, you've saved the company a ton of money because you didn't waste any energy building something that ultimately was going to fail. But even when there's meaningful ROI possible, sometimes it doesn't happen, and for confusing reasons. Years ago, I worked for a company that had a product that could generate 5x return on investment. Our sales team simply could not imagine why customers were not beating down our door to get a 5x return on investment. And we were so sure that this would work that we offered to take data samples from the customer and prove that ROI was there. Yet sales call after sales call, our sales team experienced rejection. Now, this is a problem that bothered me for a long time because I'd seen this pattern repeat over and over again in my work. We know a problem exists, we know a solution's available, and we know there's ROI. This is a no-brainer, right? The world is complicated. And as we dug deeper in with our prospects, we heard something that was jarring. Yes, our prospects even agreed with us that there was a 5x ROI. For $1 million software fee, they could yield $5 million in ongoing operational savings. So why in the world did they not buy and buy right away, happily? Well, their blocker was that while this was true, the context of our target market was they were trying to solve a $100 million problem. Sure, a net return of $4 million a year was good, but it represented a drop in the bucket compared to the huge problems their leaders considered urgent. Our great solution had trouble getting traction because it wasn't urgent from our prospects' point of view. We have to understand the business context and whether the problem we are offering to solve is urgent compared to the other problems that facing the business. If we get this wrong, we will feel the same pain our salespeople felt over and over and over again. Now, another consideration is, how does Old Reliable fit in the overall flow of data and work in the organization? The business has changed a lot since Old Reliable was originally designed, and your team is smart, and they have been solving problems for years and years and years with the limits in that toolkit. They've become aware of them. They are strongly motivated to try and find good solutions for that. And for example, you may find that Old Reliable's users take the output they get from Old Reliable, and then they massage it in Excel or Access even, to combine or simplify the data. They may have written scripts or tools that convert or move data to other systems that have been developed to make that core system even more helpful. And as we evaluate this, we have to look to see whether the replacement system ought to incorporate those things or not. In one case that sticks out to me, we realized the legacy application was sharing the same kinds of data with multiple different systems. And if we could, instead of using a recurring exported data file, if we could transform that into an endpoint that would allow other systems to more readily access up-to-date information, that could improve accuracy, and it could improve performance. And if we continued with like for like, we would have periodically exported data to be imported to the other systems. But a true business transformation would mean interactive queries of up-to-date data, improving accuracy. And this set of questions is a detailed look at what business problem or problems are we really trying to solve. It's true, it can make the scope larger than a simple like-for-like replacement, but it can make the impact far greater as well. So as we wrap up the first part of our formula, business concept and blueprint, we turn our attention to the second of the three parts. Part two, I call foundation and build. Once we have an idea of the core business needs to solve, we can turn our attention to the major plan and the major features of the application. In this portion of the formula, we plan for the primary modules needed to deliver the business value. At this point, we're looking at where the value can be delivered, how quickly can we create this value, and how can we get feedback that allows us to increase the speed of our learning during this effort. We're not writing code yet. We're doing product roadmap planning, and our features are not deeply defined yet. We're creating blueprints that are going to be used by the builders to deliver the value that was needed. Here in part two, we lay the foundation for our building, and we begin the process of construction. Now, it is really, really tempting at this point to have your business analysts focus on writing user stories, hand that off to the engineers, and wait for the code to get shipped. But another distinction here is in our formula, we continue with business stakeholder engagement in the process of defining and refining user stories. We have the business stakeholders engaged in seeing early development work and seeing the outputs from the engineers. Now, this is critical for two reasons. First, it helps because the business folks can see the progress and get some tangible insights into the new process and the progress that's actually being made. And secondly, it allows us to assess and make plans for the non-technology problem, the people. Now, I mentioned earlier there were two factors that are regularly overlooked, and this is one that is critical and foundational to success. I cannot say enough about the fact that the eventual technology deployment is only one part of your needed change management process. The reality is, in your new world, if you intend to see success from your effort, you are going to need champions among the people to help embrace the new tools and help others begin to use them also. I recently read an anecdote about a man who convinced his grandfather, after much argument, to buy a smartphone. Grandpa never took it out of the box. Even a perfectly designed tool without adoption will deliver zero value. So in our process, we are constantly learning and evaluating the kinds of people and process changes that will be needed in order to maximize business value. So what kinds of changes are we talking about? Well, sometimes the people who are currently using these tools will adapt and embrace the new way. Oftentimes, they won't. We may need to recruit new people to take over some of these functions, and we may need to help find good roles for the people who are not going to be able to adapt, but are going to need a place to work, and they're just not a fit for doing this new way of doing things. Now, you might be thinking at this point, look, I'm not an HR person. I'm not a business transformation person. I'm a tech person. Why do I need to worry about the people side of change? Well, I just got off a call with a colleague today who was part of a massive effort that they called a business transformation. They ended up getting as far as a pilot rollout to a few sites. One of the things about this effort was it was seen as a technology initiative, not a business effort. The end result? For two of the three pilot sites, the staff gave lip service to the new technology, but ultimately we went back to using manually updated Excel sheets. And the third site? They had to shut that site down entirely. Thinking about these new roles and new responsibilities created by these changes will definitely lead to cultural change in your organization. Ignore them at your peril. And in the second part of the formula, we focus on delivering the technical solution. Now, this is not a waterfall, define everything up front process. We need to be constantly evaluating business value and looking for opportunities. Because we begin with business results, we pay attention to those throughout the entire process, we're able to keep the highest value items at the top of our to-do list. And finally, we turn to the third part of our formula, launch and business impact. Now, so far, we've defined the business problem we're solving, we laid out the parameters for the services that would define success, and then we began a process of building that gave the business constant feedback and helped both the business and technology folks continuously learn and reprioritize based on value delivered. In our launch and business impact part of our formula, we have two major concerns. First, can we deploy this solution to a limited number of users and get benefit and see results from that? And secondly, what will it take to convert from the existing platform to the new solution across the whole organization? Again, the common approach is typically the code exists, just start using it. But time and again, that is going to fail. Another common idea is we need to get off the old stuff fast. Let's do a big bang cutover. And I'll warn you that in my experience, time and time again, that is going to fail also. So we create a rollout plan to a set of users and business cases that can deliver benefit quickly. We watch what happens. We give those users a direct feedback channel to the business transformation team so that we can learn quickly. There's an adage that says, no battle plan survives contact with the enemy. That's true. Getting quick feedback from the new users allows the team member to better understand things and pivot as needed. In our case, we realized the initial workflow we had forecasted needed to be redesigned because the volume of transactions now was so much greater. If we had waited to learn that until after the full rollout, it would have been much more difficult for us. And while we're establishing stabilization with our pilot or our MVP users, we can work in a more detailed way on a full rollout plan, which needs to incorporate not only the data flows and the integrations, but also the people and process changes needed for technical operations, fulfillment team, customer support, and the end users too, so they can all be successful. This may require new business processes, HR changes, and frankly, human behavior changes. This part of the process is critical to your success, and it's painful to me to see how often we tend to think somebody else is going to take care of it. As we wrap up our rollout process, we go back to the business and we confirm that the expected results are actually happening. Again, this is often overlooked, but it's so helpful. Now, if you've hung in here this long, congratulations. As I close, I want you to think about the kinds of tech refresh projects that are ahead of you. How can you apply this formula to your work? If there are parts of this formula you're not following yet or where you don't have buy-in from stakeholders, who do you need to influence to help build the kind of momentum that you need to build? If you can't seem to get traction with the right people, something to consider is this. Is this problem worth solving? Or should we stop trying until it is worth solving? You may be working on that $5 million problem when senior leaders are focused on the $100 million problem and they just can't get behind a project that small. I want to thank you for joining me for today's Software Horror Story, and I'd love to hear how things are going for you. You can reach out to me at feedback@brighthillgroup.com. That's feedback@brighthillgroup.com.